Welcome to the Wellness Renaissance Podcast, exploring topics to help you find the pieces that fit into your health puzzle.
Holistic is a really, really broad term, and sometimes people feel like, okay, that is the voodoo or the woohoo medicine, when in reality it is truly like what we should be practicing. And I honestly do think a lot of people are, but they just don't realize it.
Hey, this is Judy with Wellness Renaissance, and that was Jan Tomaino, and she is a holistic nurse. Her business is called Orange Blossom Healing Arts. And as you might imagine, the statement that she made a few seconds ago there about what holistic means, that it is something that we should be practicing, and that it is something that many people are, I totally agree with and love it. And she is going to talk about a little more about that, what it means to be a holistic nurse. Other words and concepts like integrative, alternative, complementary, we hear those words swimming around and they've kind of changed and morphed over time. So what do they mean? What did they mean? What are we utilizing as far as descriptions now? Part of the work Jan does is she works with essential oils, and she has extensive training and certification in essential oils and their safety and their uses. And that is something she integrates with her practice, but she also shares it with others in the form of teaching and training, both formally in actual college classes that she will talk about, but also with people in smaller groups too. So something that any of us can utilize. She has been a huge part of the advancement of integrative therapies being used and understood here in Duluth, and a part of just things moving forward. So she's kind of been a boots on the ground, has her hands in it. She knows what's going on, and she's been a wonderful force for educating and supporting awareness and usage of these therapies, which for so many are so hugely helpful. And even not just the specific therapies, but the mindsets around being open to these concepts is, I think, really important, and I think helpful and beneficial to all of us in our health and wellness and care. We'll head into our conversation, and then after that, I will share Jan's contact information with you, as well as an event that's happening here in Duluth, Minnesota on November 8th. Well, thank you so much, Jan, for taking your time. I know you're a super busy person and you've got a lot going on. I'm really excited to hear from you and have other people hear about the work that you're doing, and you're so involved in what's going on in Duluth and have a lot to share with us.
Well, thanks, Judy. Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
So you're a holistic nurse.
Yes.
So tell me, first, let's just talk about what that means a little bit, and then I want you to share how you got here. What is kind of your road getting you to that point and where you're at now?
Okay, so nursing is my background. And a holistic nurse, oftentimes people think that you have to belong to something or you have to do something special to be a holistic nurse. In reality, it is probably a lot of nurses practice in a holistic practice. So it's paying attention to the whole person, mind, body, spirit. You're paying attention to their emotional needs and addressing that whole person. However, there is a formal American Holistic Nurses Association that people can belong to, and it's ahna.org, and they provide a wealth of information, a lot of education components, advocacy, just a ton of things. And locally, we have our chapter that is part of them. So it is the Great North AHNA. You can find it by Googling Great North AHNA. There's actually a longer name for it. And we have a Facebook page. We have a website. It was formed in about 2012. I was part of the founding committee, and it has grown. We offer things, anywhere from 6 to 8 times a year. And sometimes they're just a simple networking event, and sometimes it's a fun activity, and sometimes it's a speaker that really is practicing in a holistic or an integrative manner. So practicing a modality like energy-based therapy. And the last 3 years, this will be our third year, we are offering a retreat. So this year it's November 9th and 10th, and we hold it at the McCabe Renewal Center. And we have wonderful presentations coming in. So Qigong, Feng Shui, herbal therapies are just a few of them.
And is that for like anybody could go to that?
It's for anybody, wow. But there is a limit because it's space. A rather small space. We aren't at capacity yet.
Okay.
And you can find us on Facebook if you're interested in that. And that group actually just provides a lot of support and networking of like-minded people. So
nice. I'm thinking of my experiences while I've been in the hospital.
Right.
And I'm thinking of how sometimes the nurses haven't been in a place of paying attention. You know, they're there to get their job done and they're there to keep me okay. But sometimes, so how can we and I do want to get back to your, how you got here, but this just really piqued my interest. How does a person say that's what they're kind of looking for? That's what they need with care. Like, I think everybody needs that, but I know, just to give you one example, I was in the hospital. They went to go take my IV out. I do not do well with that. Just, I need to lay down, right? And I kept saying to the nurse, I need to lay down. No, you're going to be fine. I need to lay down. No, you're fine. And you know, Joel is sitting there going, she needs to lay down. And I was, you know, I survived the experience, but it was just very icky. And I was just like, that was like the only thing at this particular clinic that went in my mind kind of bad, but it was that feeling of how do I advocate for myself to say, no, I need you to stop it. I really need to lay down. And I'm thinking, somebody with your mindset, with the holistic mindset, would probably have stopped and just said, okay, because all I had to do was literally turn in my bed and lay down.
Right. And that's, unfortunately, things that happen. And it's not that they're bad nurses by any means.
Oh, for sure.
But there is a different way of looking at things. And having been a staff nurse for many, many years, I know how busy places are. Mm-hmm. But honestly, some of these things that we can do, like allowing you to lay down and you advocating for yourself and somebody ignoring that, really doesn't go over well. So this is what I'm saying. It's simple. You look at the whole person. So by you laying down and possibly a nurse guiding you through some breathing exercises, even just simple couple breaths, probably would have left you with a much better taste in your mouth.
Clearly, I remember this experience till today.
Yeah. And so another aspect of that, so you said you had a really great experience up until that point. Well, this happens a lot. Mm-hmm. People can have the best experience. They can have a many-day hospital stay, but then their discharge goes poorly and something happens, and that's all they think of is like, nope, I got horrible care there. So we need to provide good care no matter which stage of the hospitalization or clinic stay, and by everybody. So it's not just nurses. It's like we can all practice taking care of the whole person.
So I love it, and I love that you kind of talk about this as sort of a mindset and letting maybe, if there's other nurses listening to this who are kind of interested, like you say, there's that resource to kind of go get into that mindset to help understand that. So what brought you to this place? So you were a nurse, but what kind of brought you in and then helped you to get to the holistic piece of it all?
Okay. It's been a long, long, long journey. So after I'd been a nurse for quite a long time, and I was working as a pediatric intensive care nurse, which can be very stressful at times, and I just kept thinking, there is more to caring for our patients than what we're doing. There's just more than giving a medication or this or that or this treatment. And I just by chance happened upon Healing Touch, which I had never heard about before, but I had a distant relative from Minneapolis tell me about Healing Touch at a family gathering. And she had been a nurse, wasn't practicing as a nurse then, and had some symptoms of MS, and she said it helped her so much. Well, I started looking into it, and one thing led to another, and they were offering classes. Actually, they were sponsored by Essentia back then, and they had periodic classes, like scheduled classes, levels, and there's different levels. Level 1, level 2 was often offered in Duluth, and I was never able to fit it in my schedule. So I went to Minneapolis for one, and I went to Grand Marais for another one. And my daughter, who was a massage therapist at the time and is a nurse now, went with me. And so we took this, both coming from different perspectives of it, and we were blown away. And I said, this is something that just opened my eyes to all realms of possibility. And it's, if you've never heard of healing touch or energy-based therapy, I encourage you to Google it and see what you can find. But we are bodies of energy, and there is so much in our energetic levels, and there is science to back this up. So I'm not just talking, you know, just saying this to say it. But it opened my eyes to other possibilities, and I didn't practice it a lot. But I wanted to. I just couldn't figure out how to incorporate it in my nursing at the time. And then the next thing was I had a coworker who really got heavy into essential oils and brought me some information, and she was connected with a multi-level marketing company, which is really popular. And I knew nothing about these. I had read a little bit, and I didn't even know where to begin, and I was super interested, and I bought a few. I bought a little kit, and then she brought me information. Well, I'm perfectly fine accepting anecdotal information. However, I do have a science side to me. So I tried to search for the studies that were provided within her information, and I couldn't find them. And it was really interesting.
Wow.
But one thing led to another, and as I was searching for these things, I already was a member of the Holistic Nurses Association, so I happened upon their site and found endorsed programs for aromatherapy that was geared towards healthcare. And I also ran across, it was a fairly new statement put out by the Minnesota Board of Nursing that addresses integrative therapies. And when I talk about integrative therapies, some of you might know them as alternative or complementary and alternative. But the newest term is integrative, meaning it's not instead of, it's not an add-on fluff, but we're truly integrating treatments or modalities into the care right from the beginning or into our well-being. So this statement by the Board of Nursing was really strong, and Minnesota was one of the few states at the time that addressed it. And it basically stated, if you want to practice any of these integrative therapies under your nursing license, you need to have education from a respected body of knowledge, and it has to pertain to nursing. So it's not like I could get some education from the multi-level marketing company or a salesperson and think that's okay. That's not how it works. And there's many parts to this statement, but basically it's like treating an integrative therapy just as we treat any other treatment in nursing. We have to have the knowledge base, and we have to assess our patients, and we have to document and educate. So it's all incorporated. So it led me to take an aromatherapy course. So that was back in 2003, and took me a couple of years to get through the whole program.
So that's just interesting right there. Mm-hmm. So you went through an aromatherapy essential oils class that was multi-years long.
Well, it was modules. Like it was a continual. So there are many, many essential oil programs, education programs in the U.S. And so the thing about aromatherapy, there is no national certification body. So I am a certified clinical aromatherapist, but my certification is through the program that offered the classes. And so it fit the guidelines within a national aromatherapy organization called NAHA. So they have put out guidelines for people who want to learn about aromatherapy that they need to fit within these. And there's many components of that as well. And it can be a number of hours, so like 200 hours up to 500 hours. And so it really depends on what your goal is within this. And I felt comfortable because the program I went to was offered in week-end modules over a two-year period. Okay. And a lot of reading and a lot of working on things in between time, so to practice. But once I got done, could I practice that in my nursing practice? No, because there wasn't a policy in the hospital.
Okay.
And even though I was trained at that, and same with healing touch, I couldn't just go and offer it. So any of these integrative therapies, modalities, there needs to be policies within healthcare organizations for you to do it. That being said, I know that there's a lot of different organizations that people will bring their essential oils in, and I always say, well, they're offering them under the table. And that does sometimes happen. And it can be good, it can be bad. Mm-hmm. Because do the nurses or who else who is providing these know what they're doing? Do they know the safety aspects of them? So this was many years ago, and I went on to work. I worked in hospice home care for quite a while. And during that time, I went back to school at the University of Minnesota and got my DNP, which is a Doctor of Nursing Practice in integrative health, so in a wider range. So it's not just aromatherapy. There's a number of, it's really holistic nursing at its highest level. Okay. So it's a doctorate level at a clinical, thinking about clinical versus research. So it's like we take the current research and put it into practice.
Okay.
So
interesting.
Yeah, so that opened up some doors for me, and I worked in clinical education for a while, and during that time I had a handful of people coming to me, and I was very thankful that my director allowed me to use part of my FTE to work on some of these integrative health projects. So at Essentia during this time, the first thing that we did, we got healing touch classes implemented. It was done in a different way, so Essentia wasn't really sponsoring them, but they were letting us use their space, and we could advertise them within the nursing and other staff. So they are being offered in the community now. I don't think they're not being offered in the hospital, but several nurses have taken healing touch classes, and many, many other people in other disciplines. And one thing led to another, and out of a pain committee, there was a request for a non-pharmacological, so a non-medical, non-drug treatment for pain.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're in the big opioid epidemic, and really looking at what else can we do for pain.
Right.
So a few of us got together, and we were able to put together a project. It was a pilot project that was on two inpatient units using healing touch providers, volunteering their time 3 days a week during specific hours. And it ran over about 5 months. We also included a wonderful researcher from the research department at Essentia, and healing touch provider in town, Stacy Quaid, who teaches healing touch, and Michelle Russell. They were all involved in helping us just get this program going and keep it going. And I think we had five volunteers. I don't remember if it was 5 to 7 volunteers. Ran over 5 months. We collected data, and we showed some great significant reductions in pain, anxiety, and overall comfort level. Wow. Of these patients. But unfortunately, we couldn't get anybody to include it in the budget.
Oh.
So we went back to the drawing board, and a second pilot ensued. And the first one was supported by the Essentia Health Foundation. The second one was supported by the Miller Dwan Foundation. And the second one was done on physical rehab unit at Miller Dwan. And that one lasted for 6 or 7 months. I can't remember. And again, really nice, significant results. There are a few practitioners who have continued to volunteer their time despite the project being mm-hmm. done. And we're in the process of, well, the data has been analyzed, and we're in the process of writing that up and submitting it for publication in a couple different places. And it's been presented at a national, well, actually I presented it at an international nursing conference. It's also been presented at a national nursing conference and within the community as poster presentations. So yeah, that's fun.
Yeah, well, it's, I mean, and I hope you keep making forward momentum for those of us outliers who don't respond to pain meds.
Right.
It's I'm happy. I'm excited that Essentia, I love more places to look at this too, of just alternative options, because it's something that, as a, from my experience, when I tell the medical people that I don't respond to pain meds, they look at me like I'm just being a pain, you know? Oh. And it's like, well, I'm also not a drug-seeking patient, so give me some credit somewhere. But it's scary to me to grow older. It's scary to me to consider health issues. And I'm really hoping and wanting these hospitals and medical entities to open up to what's possible. Right. So I'm excited that you guys have been tenacious. and that you've had great results, because it's important. And those of us who don't know what to do, it's nice to know where things are happening that we can focus supporting.
Right. Well, I can tell you that the road was paved long before I even came to Essentia. There were a handful of people who had formed a complementary therapy committee. Donna Anderson, who is no longer with us, Karen Alseth, they were at the table and tried hard to get some things implemented, even a Healing Touch program, a formal program, and we just kept hitting roadblocks. So there's always been some initiative in the background, and so slowly, we're making some progress. And so during my time in clinical education, I also was able to develop an aromatherapy policy and procedure.
Oh, wow.
And that initially came out of a request from the OB world. So despite the fact that it was just them who requested it, once it started going through committees, and that was no small feat, the physician I was working with wanted it, the policy written, so aromatherapy could be implemented once they were ready throughout all of the Twin Ports hospitals and clinics. So it was written in a broader perspective. And before I left, it was implemented in a couple different places in the clinics, oncology, and in the outpatient OB-gyne area. So they were using some for procedures just to help people with relaxation and calming. And a couple of the inpatient units. And now it's being expanded, and people who are there, I'm no longer working at Essentia. But there's people who are expanding this and who are working hard at it, and it's awesome. And I just recently, as an independent consultant, helped provide curriculum for, it was an all-day integrative holistic training geared towards nursing and other staff on a couple different areas. And so it was a pilot project, and it was geared towards oncology and pediatrics. So that was fun, and we're in the process of finishing that up and collecting some data. And so they had a whole 8-hour day training looking at what is holistic health, how do you take care of yourself. And so it's not just modalities, it's not just treatments, it is ensuring that you're taking care of yourself and you want to take care of the whole person. So there is so much involved.
Wow. Yeah. So when you're talking about the whole, or the self-care, you're talking about like the nurses being able to be taking care of themselves, so they're in a good space to come and really be with their patients.
Right. Right.
So I'm curious, I'm thinking of essential oils. And of course that's like, it's a huge thing right now.
Right.
What does it look like in a hospital setting? Because I know, and I know you've talked about this a little bit, of the safety concerns and what things do we need to think about as other patients, maybe patients that don't do well with essential oils, or what, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. How does that work or look, or if you're wanting something like that, how to connect with them?
Sure. So I do teach a lot of essential oil classes, so workshops and things, and I also took over teaching through the University of Minnesota. So I'm teaching to a wide range of people. And it is like something I'm so passionate about, because there's a lot of myth and a lot of misinformation in the world about safe use of essential oils. So on one hand, it's awesome. People want to use some of these like alternative or integrative treatments to help with their own care, and they're not interested in always taking a medication. That's awesome, and it gives them some autonomy. The problem is that there are a lot of myths and companies that are promoting very unsafe use. So as we teach nurses and other staffs to use them in the hospital, it can be twofold. So we're looking at using essential oils in the hospital for very simple symptom management. So we aren't saying, here, smell this lavender, it will take away your pain. We are saying, okay, do you want to try to do some inhalation with lavender? And it can be as simple as on a cotton ball, 1 to 2 drop on a cotton ball. And it may help to reduce your pain or provide added comfort that can then relax you and your pain may decrease. So it is looking as an adjunct to symptom management. And typically in the hospital setting or clinical setting, we look at the symptoms of pain, anxiety, overall stress, fatigue, because there are some essential oils that can actually stimulate you, insomnia, and nausea.
Mm.
And one really exciting thing I have to say is that we also use peppermint after someone has had a baby or had surgery and they're unable to go to the bathroom. They're unable to urinate. And a problem with that is sometimes it's related to medication. It can be related to a number of things. So there's anecdotal information that's been used by OB nurses for a long time. They would put a couple drops of toilet or a couple drops of peppermint in the toilet or in, we call it a hat, the little thing that sits under a toilet seat when their patients could not go. And for whatever reason, it helped them go. So that is included in the policy.
Wow.
And lo and behold, we haven't collected hard data on it. However, about 50% of the people who have tried it have been successful. So that is huge when you're thinking, considering that, oh, this person may need a catheter placed.
Mm.
And which may in
nobody
turn...
Nobody likes a catheter.
No, nobody likes that. And nobody likes an infection.
Right.
There's a high rate of infections from urinary cath. So it's kind of exciting. And they, Essentia, will be in the process of collecting some data on this. And one of my colleagues, who is a nurse researcher in Oregon, has already started collecting some data. So it's fun. And there really isn't good, hard research on it. There's a lot of anecdotal information. And when I was trying to find research, I found one master's thesis study that ended up being quite small, but 3 of the people that were actually tested were able to, they were successful.
Wow.
So this is something that is really exciting. And this is something, what I'm saying, is so simple. And there is some scientific evidence on why this happens, but that would be in good other podcasts.
Right.
You know, as we go in depth.
right.
To that.
But it's great, and it's I love science. I mean, mm-hmm. Science is a beautiful thing. But I love that they're open or that people are bringing stuff forward to what is work, mm-hmm. especially when it's simple,
mm-hmm.
and it's non-invasive.
Right.
And most of the time, peppermint, probably okay for pretty much everybody. But to have it be such a simple thing, and my gosh, if it only works 5-10% of the time, but if it actually works for somebody, that's a lack of a potential infection, it's a lack of catheter. That's huge for that.
That's
for that,
huge.
That 1%, that's
well,
huge.
Well, that's huge. And if we would say a medication worked for 50% of the people, we would think that's great.
Right.
So here's some aspects of peppermint that people in the community don't always know about. Peppermint should not be used with children under 6 years old, under 5 years old. There is a potential that getting it really close to their nose due to several physiological reasons could cause them to have a bronchial spasm.
Oh, wow.
And we say that age, some people will say 2 years old, but actually there is a part of the system that the menthol in the peppermint may react with that is not developed enough until they are beyond 5 years old. So it's so variable. It may not affect somebody, but why take the chance?
Mm-hmm.
So at Essentia, they are rolling out essential oils on pediatrics now, and they won't be using peppermint on that unit. They will only be using spearmint.
Okay.
Another thing with peppermint, some nursing moms have found that peppermint, and it could be various forms of peppermint, has decreased their milk supply.
Oh, wow.
And it's not well known, and and it's not serious, but just, you know, it's something to be aware of. There is information out there that peppermint shouldn't be used with cardiac patients or somebody with atrial fib, but the study doesn't bear that information out. So there's a lot of research. Some of them are in animal models or lab, you know, in the petri dish. And there's more and more that's growing of the research with actual humans and clinical studies. But there's many aspects of the safety of essential oils.
Yeah, and I think we are going to dive into that in another podcast, because I think it's just even for people to be aware, so that even if they are making a quote-unquote wrong decision, they know, they know what they're doing.
Right. So I just want to say, so this is one thing, when staff are trained on using essential oils safely, then they have the information to give to patients who may not be.
Right, exactly. And to let somebody know, hey, when you go home, don't have the peppermint around the baby or whatever the case might be.
Right.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. Thank you for sharing that. I want to go back. You talked a little bit about the words integrative. And I want to kind of just mention the words that come to mind for me: holistic, integrative, alternative, complementary. And you kind of divided them out. And I just want to talk just a little bit about that, because some of these words feel like holistic, it doesn't quite fit in the category potentially of integrative, alternative, and complementary, depending on how you use the word. Where holistic, like you said, it's thinking about the whole person. It's thinking about mind, body, spirit. It's the whole thing, right? Anything you want to add to that definition?
Well, holistic is a really, really broad term. And sometimes people feel like, okay, that is the voodoo or the woohoo medicine. When in reality, it is truly like what we should be practicing. And I honestly do think a lot of people are, but they just don't realize it. So if you think about holistic as a really broad term, and many of us struggle with the terminology because sometimes people don't know what we're talking about. So I'll go back to alternative. And when we first started bringing different type of treatments into mainstream medicine, which sometimes people call Western medicine or allopathic medicine. However, I heard a physician speak one time and he said, I had no idea what allopathic meant.
Oh, so, wow. And
so he was at something that his daughter dragged him to, and I thought, well, that's interesting. But alternative was a term that was, you know, that people really looked at, okay, I'm going to do this instead of, and I'm going to take these vitamins or these supplements instead of taking treatment, or I'm going to do this instead of getting chemotherapy. So it could be a whole wide gamut of things. And the more and more research came out and it was more inclusive, then they changed the term to complementary. But complementary to some people means it's an add-on, it's a fluff. So they don't think that it's important, and it's like, okay, if nothing else works, yep, let's try that. And then it was also known as complementary and alternative, so CAM, C-A-M. And there is a government agency, so the National Institute of Health. Under the National Institute of Health, there is an agency called the National Center for Complementary and Integrative Health. And that used to be known as NCAM, so it was easy to remember, National Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine. And now it's been changed. So they've jumped on the bandwagon of using the term integrative. And again, integrative means that we want to incorporate everything from the beginning of treatment for well-being. And there's no reason not to. It's because if we think of it as an adjunct and as inclusive, why wouldn't we want to include everything else?
Right. Well, from a patient perspective, not including those things has that feeling that you're not interested in my actual well-being, my actual health outcome, and what I'm doing and how I think about my care.
And you are one of the people who really highlight that. And it's not necessarily that you have a cap on that says, I want holistic care, or you go to your physician or you go to the hospital and you're saying that. But we should treat everybody like that, right?
It would open the doors for more honesty.
Right.
You know, I know many people who have said, oh, I'm never going to tell my doctor I'm doing that. Or I broached it and all they said was, nope, You know, I used to work with a nutraceutical company that I knew people who went from the, at the time, alternative mm-hmm. option, who really improved their health. And they tried to talk to their doctor, and their doctor said, no, you know, I don't know about that, so it can't be any good. Mm-hmm. And then they would start to get better. So they go to the doctor and ask the questions, and the doctor's like, yeah, you're just a big mystery. And they're like, I know exactly why. I mean, I feel like I know why I'm getting you better. It's these things that I'm doing, but I feel like I can't talk to you about them. And I still struggle with that today. And I've certainly had doctors where I can sort of say, I really don't, you know, I want meds to be the last thing we do. And them to go, okay, that's how you, then we'll do that then. And maybe they present all the options, which is great. I want them to present all the options. But to know that I can say, this is what I'm doing, and I'm not going to get shot down for it, is so important. And I wish physicians could hear that and hear, mm-hmm. they don't get to hear what's working for patients. Mm-hmm. And I did a whole podcast on a health issue that I had last year, that my doctor wasn't the problem, the clinic, the nurses, the people who weren't listening mm-hmm. to me. And the information didn't really get to her, and nobody cared. When the treatment that I chose to do worked, nobody mm-hmm. cared. And that's like the most soul-killing thing when you're excited about something and you're talking to the nurse and the test results are positive and you're like, no, you don't know what this means to me. This means that I just like kept myself from getting cancer, and this is amazing, and I did it this way. And they're like, oh, that's nice. You know, like,
so you brought up some really, really big topics. So number one, research does bear out that people will not tell their providers, their physicians, their nurse practitioners, or whoever, because of the fears that you have said. Some people won't tell them because they don't even think it's important.
Yes.
They think they won't care, so it really doesn't matter. And, you know, I know that there are questions included now in when you go for your clinic visit or you're admitted to the hospital, and they'll ask you, are you using supplements or are you doing something? But I don't know what they're doing with it. And so many people experience the issues like you had. The second thing is what you described is evidence-informed care. So let's say you presented what you wanted to do to your physician, and your physician said, let's say you presented, oh, I hear acupuncture will work really good for my back pain. Well, the physician might say, well, you know, I know that they've been using it for a long time. I don't know that any of the research is showing this, but I do know some other patients that it's been helpful for, but I really can't tell you that it will help you. And your physician might say a couple more things. Well, you're given all these different options, so they're bringing the history of what they know and what they can
sure.
grab from what's worked for other patients. Maybe the doctor does know about some research that's been very effective, and maybe the research hasn't been very effective, maybe. But you as the patient are the one who's being informed and should be deciding that.
Right. Well, and that, just like the way you worded it, it opens the door to feel like, okay, I can talk to you about what I'm thinking
right.
without you shutting me down.
Right.
You know, which I think is just a huge problem in people getting the right care that they need, because then they're not sharing with their doctor what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So if something does come up that maybe you are doing something that's contraindicative, and maybe, or some aspect of what you're doing, but that's never going to come up because the patient's too afraid mm-hmm. to speak. And if they could be kind of, well, okay, go ahead and do this, but be aware of this thing. Mm-hmm. Okay. Cool. Thank you. You know,
right.
It opens the dialogue.
Right. And oftentimes they'll shut it down because they don't have the knowledge base. So thankfully, Dr. Nancy Sudak is in town.
Yes.
And developing an integrative medicine department at Essentia. And she's pretty well known in the community, and people who have mentioned her name and people have seen her in the past. So she is a functional medicine practitioner, doctor, and she also has a nurse practitioner working with her now, and they are very, very busy, and they are booked out. There's also a functional medicine dietitian, functional nutrition dietitian, and either one or two acupuncturists who are in that department now.
That's exciting. And I will tell you that her being there gives me hope. Like, just her existing in that space gives me hope, because I know the work that she does, and I know how much people appreciate it. And I recommend her to people who I'm working with sometimes, and I've heard she's very, very booked out.
And then there's naturopath.
Yes.
Physicians in town.
Absolutely.
And they are phenomenal as well. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, insurance doesn't pay for them.
Right.
But they are very experienced and they are excellent. So I worked with a naturopath several years ago when I broke my arms and had a osteoporosis diagnosis. I worked with Dr. Shannon May.
Oh, yes.
And by tweaking some nutritional things, mostly just with my diet and looking at some things, I increased my bone density by 16% and no longer have osteoporosis.
Wow, that's awesome. And that's one of those things that how many people hear you can't change.
Right. And that was without medication.
That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And we've had both Shannon May and Jocelyn Strand on the podcast. And yeah, you're right. There are other amazing outside options to get the help you need, get some questions answered. Mm-hmm. And we have so many great people in this town.
We do.
We are really lucky.
We do. And for a long time, we've had a very conservative medical community, but that's changing, which is awesome. And I always said, well, we have a lot of holistic, you know, I'll use the word holistic or integrative practitioners in town, but they're in pockets and people don't know where to find them. And
yes.
And then it's sometimes the have and the have not. So can you afford it? Which can be unfortunate.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like my little dream, is that everybody can just, you know, when I think of this concept of universal healthcare, it's also the, can we get the naturopaths on board? The naturopaths want to be on board.
Right.
Like, they want to do the work. That is not in question.
Yes.
But it's being able to, you'd say, how do you figure all of this out? And man, if we can have that, I mean, I think of, I work with an osteopath and a chiropractor, that I'm like, I want everybody to have this, because I can see so many people that it's like, man, if I was just Bill Gates rich and I could just take you with me and say, no, you're going here for a year. We're just doing this. That would be like a dream come true.
I know.
You know?
It's kind of crazy. So here's an example. Acupuncture. There's a lot of research and there's recommendations now up at the top levels that it is standard of care, acupuncture and chiropractic care, for patients with back pain, and maybe it's certain back pain. But yet Medicare wasn't paying for acupuncture, unless that has recently changed and I missed it. But it's like, isn't that interesting? But insurance companies would pay for acupuncture for certain indications.
Interesting. Yeah, we got to get Medicare on board with some of these things too. And I want to go back, just back to the words, because I'm thinking of the change in the words. And we're kind of talking about this with the attitudes shifting, with the words of complementary and alternative and integrative. And we're shifting, like you're saying, places are changing their names. We got an integrative clinic.
Right.
And I'm thinking of how the attitude, if we can help the attitude change with the way doctors talk to us, our practitioners talk to us, for the simple fact that when I started doing my own care, it felt very complimentary and alternative, for exactly what I'm saying, the attitudes of, you felt like you were outside of the world, and I didn't feel like I could integrate that with my Western medicine. It felt like it had to be this separate thing. I was fortunate that I had a doctor who said, well, the meds you're on aren't good for you, so if something natural works, go for it. I mean, bless her heart. And so I'm excited to see this come into the integrative world, become a thing and become a real thing, because the complementary and alternative, maybe those words can kind of be not so, maybe to the side,
right?
Because it can all be integrative and it could just be seen as this whole part of the picture.
Right. So it's taken us a while in Duluth to get to where we are, and it's still moving, but at least it's moving, and I feel forward movement. And the Twin Cities has had a number of healthcare organizations that have different ways that they treat the whole big integrative health world. Allina has a big program, and they have for quite some time. Health East has incorporated a lot of things, and their hospital in Woodbury, called Woodwinds, was built in 2000 with a holistic model in mind. So, and they're a smaller hospital, 80-some bed, but just the fact that 2000, so 18 years ago, they were actually built with that model in mind.
That's exciting. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Their building was actually built with intention to, to bring, nature inside. They have a labyrinth outside.
Wow.
It's really wonderful. And I've been in several other buildings in different places in the country that have been built with a lot of intention, and it makes a difference.
Right. As we're talking about the attitudes of our doctors, mm-hmm. and are shifting mm-hmm. in a really great way, how do we as patients mm-hmm. advocate for ourselves, and what, what words can we use, if there is anything you can think of, that help our doctor to help open that door? I know some people, it is literally going, I'll just find a different doctor. But how do we say that, whether it's to the doctor, whether it's to the nursing staff, whether mm-hmm. it's to the intake, when we make an appointment? Mm-hmm. I feel like sometimes when you try to express, when you're looking for a doctor, I want somebody who's more holistic minded, or who is looking and willing to consider my other integrative treatment options. I don't know. From even my own experience, I don't know if they're actually listening to me or if they're giving me the person with the next available appointment. You don't feel heard. How do we advocate for ourselves, whether it's in the moment or even afterwards, after we've had an experience where we really want to just impart, this happened to me and I'm really concerned about it, and it's really affecting my care with you?
Well, we all have to learn how to advocate for ourselves, right? And the generation of my parents, they felt like their doctors and nurses, any of the staff, were God, and they did whatever they were told. Mm-hmm. So future generations, and I have a lot of faith in the millennials coming up, are much better about advocating. But it's so difficult when you broach a subject and you get shot down immediately. Well, there are several people who have changed their providers because of that, but are we doing a disservice by not saying why we're changing, mm-hmm. or give a provider the opportunity, or say, you know what, I don't feel like you're listening to me, so I think I have to go elsewhere. And who knows, they may back off and say, well, let's talk about this, or they may say, fine, I'm not the person for you. And, there have been studies on attitudes, and even when we were doing our Healing Touch pilot, and now with the integrative holistic training that we did, we were doing surveys. So we did a pre-survey and a post-survey of staff, and it's actually looking at the attitudes and beliefs of the staff who are doing the training. So for instance, in the Healing Touch, the nurses received an anonymous survey. And I don't know, we had maybe 30-40% of them complete it. And we asked questions like, do you believe Healing Touch can help patients? And there are some who absolutely thought, absolutely not. Well, we did see a shift in attitudes. And I think sometimes it's just education. And as a patient, we can arm ourselves with as much good information as we can find. That doesn't mean going to Dr. Google. It means knowing where you can find really, really good resources. And so that's probably a topic for another podcast as well.
Right.
But off the top of my head, you can go to the NIH organization, the National Center for Complementary and Integrative Health, and you can find some studies. I feel like, they have some good research that's on there, and if anything, it's a little bit conservative, but there's other places that have really good information. So we just have to arm ourselves and be prepared to switch providers if you need to.
I remember when I worked with this nutraceutical company, one of the things they suggested, and I didn't in the beginning, I thought, well, this is kind of messed up. But then I started to experience people's stories and mm-hmm. understand why they said this. And even though I sort of still feel like it's sort of not the best way to go about it, I totally get it. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's just because I want my healthcare provider to have a different conversation with me. But he used to say, if you really want to do this, to go to your doctor and say, I'm doing this thing mm-hmm. and I want you to monitor me mm-hmm. on it. I mm-hmm. want you to take whatever tests we need to do, but I am going to do this thing. Mm-hmm. And you may not be on board with it, but this is what I'm going to do. So mm-hmm. are you kind of with me as a partner? And it sort of felt like disingenuous, mm-hmm. but at the same time, I saw patients who the doctor would say, no, that's junk. Not, you know, and then they'd go do it secretly and the doctor didn't understand why they were getting better. And so then I began to understand why we're doing this. And again, this is why I'm excited and hope that doctors can keep having that open mind to what people are doing and hearing the experiences mm-hmm. so that when people do this, it's like, well, but it is their decision and give them your feedback.
Right. So we do have to acknowledge that there are some quackery
absolutely. That's, yeah.
And that is what has typically brought a bad name for things. But look at acupuncture. People used to think that that was like really quackery as well.
Right.
I've seen great successes with acupuncture and I've read the research studies. So, but how do people in our community then find the credible resources that they need
yes.
without paying an arm and a leg? And sometimes they are more than willing to pay so much money because they just want to get better. Mm-hmm. So I've always felt like my practice as it's evolved, I feel like I'm a bridge. And I've gotten to know a lot of practitioners in the community and make a lot of recommendations or have you tried this? Have you met this person? Or they'll ask me, what do you think about this treatment? And if I don't know, I'll try to look into it for them. And if it's not going to harm them, it's fine. The things that possibly can harm people are different kind of supplements or, you know, things that we ingest. Mm-hmm. So even in essential oils sometimes are ingested by people not knowing the harm that can cause. So they can be pretty benign, but yet cause you some problems. So it's a big can of worms.
Right. Well, and I get that. It is tricky. And yeah, trying to have the doctor not shut, and again, in the past especially, have the doctor not shut down everything right. good or bad. And then again, it sends people to just go do what they're going to do.
Right.
Speaking of resources, do you have a resource? We've talked about essential oils and safety. Mm-hmm. And if somebody's using something and it's working or they're just curious about the safety mm-hmm. of it, do you have a resource mm-hmm. that they could check into?
I do. There's two large organizations in the U.S., the NAHA, which is the National Association for Holistic Aromatherapy, and the other one is the Alliance of International Aromatherapists. And if you Google those, you can find their websites. But in general, AromaWeb, and it's aromaweb.com, they are a very credible website. And the person who is the webmaster and provides all the information has a lot of aromatherapy background education and provides extremely credible resources on there. So you could even go look up like shelf life. You want to know shelf life of essential oils. And some of you might be saying, oh, I didn't know they go bad. Well, guess what? They do. And you can find information about shelf life there. You can plug in different essential oils and find out just basic information about them. So it's a really good place to start.
Does it, out of curiosity, does it have like different... Does it talk about different companies and how they test as an outside third party sort of looking at the various companies?
They have information on their website too. Okay. On it's called GCMS testing, so gas chromatography, mass spectrometry testing of essential oils. And you always want to buy your essential oils that the companies do the testing. And even if the company does the testing themselves, they will occasionally have a third party tester just to be sure that they aren't. Or possibly it's the distributor who has sold it to them that provides the GCMS testing. And then the essential oil company will get a third-party testing on that. So, yes, you absolutely want a company that provides that. And AromaWeb has great information on it.
Wonderful.
They also have information on how the FDA provides oversight of essential oils. Guess what? they don't provide oversight. Well, they do for if the essential oil is the intentional use and you're marketing it as a drug. So you're saying it treats anxiety or it treats this or you use it for cancer. That's considered a drug. And you can't do that unless the essential oil has gone through the process of being categorized as a drug with the FDA.
Uh-huh.
And essential oil companies don't do that. So otherwise, it's categorized as a cosmetic. And a cosmetic is something that we cleanse our body with or put on our body to make it more attractive. So it gets into a really gray area. And then the whole ingestion things is a whole other topic. But people will cite the FDA and they say, yep, my essential oil is approved by the FDA for ingestion. Well, not really. It's they have a term called GRAS, generally regarded as safe, and essential oils are listed among many, many other substances that can be food additives, and they are known to be safe for food companies to add them for typically flavoring. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that you're putting this massive amount in your water and drinking it. So it's totally taken out of context. So AromaWeb has great information on that as well.
There's so much to know in this little world we live in. Is there anything else that I am not thinking to ask or that you want to impart upon the world?
Well, we've covered a lot. I guess I'll add one thing, because we talked about where do people find holistic practices if they can't afford them. So
yes.
One exciting initiative that is in the works, and hopefully it'll come to fruition, is there is a nonprofit company based out of the Twin Cities known as Pathways. It's different than a different Pathways company that is in our area that is geared towards people with disabilities. So Pathways was started about 30 some years ago. It's strictly volunteer based. Practitioners are vetted, and they have a board. They're a very well known and very credible company. They provide holistic care, so people come in and volunteer different integrative health services. So, and it could be a number of things like healing touch, Reiki, massage, just a variety of things. And they also offer classes. Some of the training that they've provided for people to facilitate is renew life or renewing life, something like that. Anyway, they are looking at the possibility of expanding in Duluth. And so there's a group of us who have been working with the executive director and looking at places and getting a feel from practitioners if this would work. And it's really geared for clients, for patients who have health illnesses that are maybe life-ending or very, very serious. So it's been geared towards that, but they don't do in-depth questions, so they don't ask you to prove different things. They don't keep records of where you're going. So it's very different than going into a clinic and getting a service, and it's absolutely free. The model may be a little bit different here, so we don't know, but the good news is that they have an interest in the Duluth area.
Right, which is exciting, and I have not worked with them incredibly. When I lived in the Twin Cities, I worked with them through the newspaper that I worked for,
okay.
And had not only great experiences with them, but just the people who talked about them and the things that they got to do and experience and therapies that they got to benefit from and learn about, open their eyes
right
to what was possible for their own treatment and for their own health. And some people walked away with tools that they mm-hmm. could use every day that they were just so grateful for, that made their life better.
Mm-hmm.
Yay. And I love it. Duluth is opening up to these great things. And I want to mention this because you're teaching courses with Coursera. So anybody can access those.
Well, that will go live, I think, sometime in January. So it's a big project. Coursera Company, which is a massive open online course or class.
Classes. Yeah. You're taking college classes
yes.
from colleges
right
at your own house for free.
And Coursera is working with the University of Minnesota to develop an integrative therapy, integrative medicine. certificate program. And so there's going to be five courses with this in this program. Aromatherapy is the one I'm working on. And there's going to be intro, guided imagery, meditation, and an herbal or botanical medicine, something like that. And it's been a lot of work. And they're supposed to go live in January. So it'll be fairly reasonable, if not free. I think there's a way to take some of the courses free if you don't, but you don't get full access.
If you don't want a certificate. Right. Yeah, yep.
Right, and so I don't know the details about that yet, but you should be able to find it after the first of the year. And then the other course I'm teaching is through the University of Minnesota. It's a one-credit fundamentals, aromatherapy fundamentals. It's supposed to be geared towards graduate programs, but there are undergrads in that as well.
Okay.
But it's online, three of the terms, and then the one term is in person in Hawaii. So come and join me in Hawaii.
Wow. Yeah. That's a nice place to have a class.
And then the other course that is on my calendar right now is February 6th, sponsored by UWS Continuing Education. And it will be, it's an all-day aromatherapy class geared towards healthcare. Okay. So nurses, doctors, dentists, anybody can come. And it will give some, it'll give a lot of good information and help you to, like, think about how you can implement it in your healthcare setting.
What about for like that class or some of the other classes? Do you think that's a good resource? I'm thinking of, you know, again, essential oils is huge, right? And we got a lot of people getting into them, and who really do, they're excited to help. I mean, it's helped them. They're excited to help other people.
Absolutely.
Are these classes, I assume, would be great for them to jump into so that they can be more effective in helping people use them safely?
Yes. Okay. And I also offer workshops at my business is at the Hub on 9th Street and 10th Avenue East. It's just that I won't have anything scheduled till after the first of the year. Okay. So I offer fun little workshops that are, you know, an hour and a half to 2 hours long. Or I offer private little classes. So if you want to gather a group of friends, I just ask for at least three, and they're really reasonable, $25-$30.
Wow.
And it gives you a good understanding of essential oils.
What a cool thing. Like, get a bunch of moms together who are excited about what the essential oil thing could do, and then get that safety piece.
Right.
Just to be able to talk about that with somebody who really, you're right there in the fray, shall we say. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. So how do people reach you if they want to find out about your classes or touch base with you?
So my website is orangeblossomhealingarts.com. I have a Facebook. You can find me by searching for that as well. And my email is jan@orangeblossomhealingarts.com.
Wonderful. Well, thank you. This has been fantastic.
Thank you so much, Judy.
Jan provided a lot of information and resources, and if you look on the show notes, may have come in your email or on the website or through iTunes, you will find many of the web addresses that she mentioned that you can refer to. So her web address again is orangeblossomhealingarts.com, and her email is jan@orangeblossomhealingarts.com. The event on November 8th that I said that I would share with you, this event is a Friendsgiving. It is an integrative health potluck, and it's happening here in Duluth. Again, it's on November 8th, which is a Thursday, and it's happening from 6 to 7:30 p.m., and it's taking place at the Toasties in downtown Duluth, in the downtown Duluth location, which is 220 West Superior Street. If you want to check it out and you are on Facebook, look up Integrative Health Potluck. And in the About section, there is actually, for certain, more information, but also a link to a RSVP, as well as signing up for the type of food you want to bring. And there's an opportunity there on that spreadsheet to list what you're going to bring, as well as any dietary specialties that something might have, whether it's gluten-free, dairy-free, or vegan, or all of that kind of stuff. if you are coming and maybe for whatever reason you didn't get a chance or you're not on Facebook, I would just suggest, from being somebody who advocates for food allergies, food sensitivities, et cetera, if you might bring a little piece of paper or card with whatever the name of the dish is that you're serving or bringing to serve and the ingredients for that dish, and maybe noting if it's gluten-free, dairy-free, vegan, etc., any kind of specialties that you know that you're making it for or that it happens to be. And even if you happen to have, you know, if you are a home, you're making it your home and you happen to have made it in a house that doesn't have peanuts because you've got a severe peanut allergy or whatever the case might be, you know, not that I'm trying to make this a huge novel to write, but at the same time, you know, if you want to make a little label or have room for that or the ability to do that, it just opens the door for people to maybe partake who don't know how to access you or where the dish comes from. And this is a great time, an opportunity to just bring that forward. We are heading into Thanksgiving and all these holiday parties, right? So many potlucks and events that we go to. And yes, some of us are bringing prepared food that has the label on it. And in many cases, not always, but in many cases can be pretty clear. You really have no idea how many people you are helping know that they can consume a particular food. I know people think, well, somebody will ask if they have a need, and that is just not the case. There are many people who go to events and they literally do not eat, or they eat the celery and the carrots because they know that that's going to be okay. This is Minnesota, and a lot of people don't want to be bothersome, or they've been really, really ridiculed about their food issues and they just don't want to hear it. So instead of bothering somebody, they just don't eat. So you never know, man, when you make, you know, even if it's mashed potatoes, if you don't have a food sensitivity or allergy, sometimes you just have no idea what listing even those ingredients. You might think it's super straightforward, right? Like you're bringing mashed potatoes and you're like, hey, it's mashed potatoes and some milk and some butter, and they're pretty basic and obvious, but what somebody else might be needing to know is, did you put garlic in there? I can handle, you know, did you make them with a different type of milk? Some people have used flour to create a different consistency in their mashed potatoes, for instance. So there's all of these things, and I know that it's kind of crazy, and I know that there's many people probably rolling their eyes right now, but it really is helpful for people with allergies, food sensitivities, celiac disease, etc. It's really a big deal, and it makes their holiday a very different experience. And it is so fun for somebody who has issues and they discover that they can eat a particular food or can enjoy the food at a particular potluck or just a couple of dishes. It makes a world of difference. It really, really does. Just a suggestion. Trust me, I have certainly brought food to potluck and forgotten my list of ingredients as well. Oh, you know what? One more thing I forgot to mention. If you are not on Facebook, you can connect with Dr. Laura Hill. She's the one who is putting on the Friendsgiving. You can connect with her at larahilldc.com. That's LARAhilldc.com. And you know, it is really funny. I have had this happen like a handful plus of times when I'm Googling to find somebody's website. I can find their Facebook page, no problem. And then sometimes it's, I'm not finding the about or whatever the case might be, finding the website. I end up having, when I've Googled, I will either Google and find my own podcast page or go to my own podcast to find people, because that's the way I can find their contact information. So if you know I've done a podcast with somebody, you're trying to find their information, feel free to go to my podcast and use that as a directory, because it certainly helped me help other people get in touch with folks. So whatever works. Speaking of which, thank you so much for listening. Check out the rest of the podcasts at wellnessrenpodcast.com. You can find all the episodes there. Feel free to join the mailing list. We just send you a quick email letting you know that new episode is out, what it's about, and how to get there. And please remember, there are multiple ways to support the podcast, whether that is sharing the podcast or an episode with a friend or somebody who the topic or the concept might be interesting to, sharing the emails, subscribing on iTunes, and putting a review would be delightful. We'd be absolutely thrilled. And of course, if you're an Amazon user, head to the podcast website first, click on the Amazon links on the Support the Podcast page and then shop as usual, and you are able to support the podcast. Again, no cost to you. You can also become a patron at Patreon. You'll see the big red button on the website. And if you have any questions about any of that, you are welcome to get a hold of me too at judy@wellnessren.com. I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Jan and got some great information from it. Take good care. We'll see you next week. And until then, may you find more pieces that fit beautifully into your health and wellness puzzle. Be well.